B-Pod Studios.
Put him in the bed. Leave him in there.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, won't see him no more.
What up?
Kay and Jay.
We say it.
We're coming to kick your head.
Four.
That's
I'll hit an old man in public.
I haven't thought of that yet.
I don't want a hot take.
Welcome to Memorial Day. Happy. Memorial Day is not one of those ones where you go, happy Memorial Day.
Hey, there.
It's why happy, though? Because we're...
It feels weird to not say happy.
But yeah, but it's a somber kind of day because today's the day of remembrance to those who fought and lost their lives. While we show appreciation, I don't know that it's happy, but it should be appreciate Memorial Day. Now, that doesn't just roll off the tongue, does it?
Yeah, it's not catching on.
No, but, I hope everybody is having a safe and happy and good Memorial Day weekend. And I hope that everybody is doing well and appreciate everyone that is listening and will listen throughout this program today. Jason Martinez, Pat Egan alongside on this Monday of Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, it's interesting because we're at this pivotal moment not only in our world, but in my opinion, kind of with sports and the way, not that we consume sports, but the way that we verbalize our consumption of sports, if that makes any sense. Now, I was reading on the Inquirer, Mike Sielski's column from the other day, and I thought it was a really good column. Mike does a really good job. The title of it just says, in the age of coronavirus, we're finding out just how much sports matters. And it does. It matters to us. And we don't say that to be insensitive to what has gone on and what's going on with the COVID-19 pandemic. But when you take something away from people, you learn what it means. And to have it taken away in a cold turkey fashion, where on March 10th or I guess it was March 11th or 12th, when all of the leagues just shut down, and that was, boom, slam on the brakes. You're going 100 miles an hour through a bunch of sports seasons, and not just the major sports. I mean, everything just slammed on the brakes. And now we're starting to see the rollout of some sports. We saw UFC a couple weeks ago, and that continues. We saw NASCAR last week and yesterday, the Coca-Cola 600. That come back, and we saw the match yesterday with Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning, which I'll have some thoughts on coming up. We've seen other sports around the globe and different countries start to sprout back up. We see news that in New York, the governor has given clearance for the major pro sports teams to return to their facilities. And where, you know, this is going to be a slow trickle to get it all back and to eventually... And we will eventually get it back to where we were prior to March of this year, where we will be back in packed stadiums again. Now, it's going to take some time, and it's going to take some innovation, some science, and a little bit of everything, but we'll be back in there, elbow to elbow, high-fiving people you don't know, and hugging after a home run by Bryce Harper or a touchdown Carson Wentz to Jalen Reagor. We'll be doing those things again. But the point of my conversation is that when we go back to that and when we go back to sports full tilt, we got to come back the wiser as a fan and a media, frankly, because there's this incessant need. And I don't know if it stemmed from political climate in this country or where it started or how we got where we are. But the pause in sports should give us also a time to self-reflect on our behaviors, the way we carry ourselves as fans, as observers, as conversationalists when it comes to sports. Because we've gone to this level in a social media world where everything is so extreme. First, if you don't agree with me, you're an idiot or you're a hater. That's number one. Number two, we love to use words like great and all the generational and superstar well before any player, coach, or anything, GM, is any of those things. We like to put these high-ranking titles on people that haven't earned it. Because we like the way they did something, or we like the way they their skill set. But greatness isn't something that you just tag on somebody. Greatness is earned. If The Last Dance taught you anything as a sports fan, it should have taught you that greatness isn't just a title. It has to be earned, and it has to be earned through accomplishment and sacrifice and all those things. Michael Jordan didn't win in the beginning. It's why when he did win, it meant something. Because he had to overcome the bad boy Pistons for all those years. And when he overcame that, and then overcame being the king of the mountain, that is what greatness is. And then you know the sacrifice that he put in, both physically, emotionally, mentally. The sacrifice of being the jerk to push his teammates to the next level. All of those things are what made not only the Bulls team great and one of the dynasties of pro sports, but it's what made Jordan great. Now, you may not have liked it, the way he acted or the way he conducted himself, but you can't deny the result was greatness. That's just the fact of the matter. But we want to stick these labels on people. And look, the other radio station in this town, there was a guy that said that Sam Hinkie was great. He was a great GM because he had the long view. And he was willing to do something and commit to it like others weren't willing to do. And that made him great. And I say that is absolute and utter BS. He may have been...
Warning, this is a hot take alert.
No, it's not a hot take. It's
no,
just,
saying Sam Hinkie was a great GM.
Yeah, yeah, that's a hot take.
Apologize for everybody who got burned out there by that one.
Yeah, because, look, he may end up being a really good GM... Or it could have been. We'll never really know because he didn't get to see it through. But to act like the guy was great, to me, is idiotic. And I don't care if you have a cult that follows you of nerds or not, because you believed in the process. The fact of the matter is that you lost on purpose. And look, losing in sports is not hard to do. Look at the Phillies. They've perfected it for years when trying not to. They're the losingest franchise in major sports. But losing's not hard to do. And collecting some generational, there's that word, right? Generational talent. Ben Simmons is a generational talent, they told us. That Joel Embiid is a generational big man. No, they're not. They're not. They may be really good players. And again, I'm not saying that they're not good players or they're not going to be superstars or stars. And maybe to some extent Embiid is, they're stars right now, but are they great players right now? Again, use the word great in the lens of accomplishment because they haven't accomplished anything yet. They're on the map and the Sixers are better off than they were pre-process. But to say that Sam Hinkie is great and for media members to say he was great to me is irresponsible. And fans, we have to stop going to an extreme. You can say Sam Hinkie did a good job because he was committed to the process and he got us out of that spin cycle that the Sixers were in. But if you're going to sit there and argue that he was great, I think that that's foolish. And I think that that's where during this pandemic and with sports taken away from us, we need to learn because it's become a lot of times sports is becoming a painful conversation because of the extremes that people want and the titles that they want to hang on guys that haven't earned it. The team has never gotten past the second round since the process. That's not great to me.
Yeah, but, I mean, I have a T-shirt with Sam Hinkie's face on it. You know, I read Sam Hinkie's manifesto to my kid as a bedtime story.
But you don't think he's great.
To say that he's great is just,
it's foolish.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being kind, but yeah, foolish.
No, it is. It's foolish. Like, you can like the guy and like the fact that he came at it from a different view, but to say...
Which is exactly why I like him.
But yeah, look, he bucked the trend, right? And there's a little bit of rebel in that.
I'd love to hear what that guy thinks about Jerry Krause. Yeah. Jerry Krause got a lot of flack for the Last Dance.
Yeah.
Sam Hinkie had his flaws.
Yes.
To ignore them, and that's the problem in this society, is that if you point out somebody's flaws while acknowledging all of the good things they do, but you point out the little tiny flaws, as you said, you're deemed a hater.
Yeah.
And
you're an idiot.
There's no middle ground.
Yeah.
And with Sam Hinkie, I love the guy. You know, I would love to have seen him have it through. To act like he didn't have his flaws is just, that's stupid.
Yeah, they talk about, you know, acquiring all these assets. Okay, what did those assets get you? They haven't gotten you past the second. And look, I know that he was unceremoniously dismissed and, well, he quit. but I get all that. And Markelle Fultz wasn't on his watch. But look, great GM, a great GM wouldn't have picked Okafor. The great GM would have picked Porzingis.
Well, see, no, I disagree with that. I think...
What, just because everybody had Okafor there in the top
three? No, it has more to do with... your argument just needs to change a little bit. It's not that a great GM wouldn't have picked Okafor. It's that a great GM wouldn't have pissed off Porzingis' agent to the point where Porzingis' agent wouldn't let him work out for the team, so you couldn't evaluate him at a pro level that you could have drafted Porzingis. And that hurt Hinkie. And there's a flaw. The fact that GMs didn't want to work with him because he would give you the TJ McConnell special of a 4-year deal for no money.
Yeah.
And if you make the team, great, but you're tied into it for 4 years making little money, and GMs couldn't stand the guy. So
yeah. And they didn't like what he was doing because he did spit in the integrity of the sport.
Or agents, I'm sorry, agents. He pissed off the agent.
And he did. Look, when you lose for 4 years straight, purposely, you are spitting on the sport. You really are. I always have said this, Pat, that the Sixers, basketball was taken away for some kids' entire high school life. Their entire high school life. 4 years. Like, those are impressionable years. And he just said, I have my process. And if the man was great, then he'd be hired somewhere else. The fact that he hasn't been. But we'll get into that and much more. I got to talk about this today because I think that we need to come back from the pandemic when everything is in full swing and be a little smarter and be a little bit better conversant at talking about sports and lose the extreme labels that we put on people. 610-632-0975. It's Jason Mertitis. It's Memorial Day Monday, and we're right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
A Brandy.
Great song.
I do love this song. This song was used in an episode of Ozark. And who was killed when that happened, Pat? This song was playing on the radio.
It was at the beginning of it. Right?
A certain cast member was killed. Spoiler alert. And this song was on the radio in his car prior to it happening.
Oh, it was the dad.
Yeah, Cade. Yep. And this was the song that was on the car as he was driving with the bag of money. And then there was a dead dog on the road. And so I'm giving away too much now.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. 610-632-0975. I've done this and I saw Derek Gunn post yesterday. Like, hey, man, I need a new show, right?
So everyone's doing now.
So see, yeah, everybody's like, he's like, I want to. I'll get the exact tweet. I love D Gun, and I love the responses to these kind of tweets because people will give you the same answers all the time. He said, somebody give me a good suspense or drama to watch on Netflix. I'm sorry, running out of options. So somebody will like say like, dude, you got to watch Ozark.
Yeah, like he hasn't.
No kidding.
Like he hasn't exhausted that option.
You know what I mean? It's like, all right, I've seen.
Hey,
at this point,
Tiger King?
Yeah. We've all seen all the obvious ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I watched.
You gotta give me something way off the main radar.
So I did this for my YouTube channel. I recapped Hannah on Amazon. Have you watched that?
I have not, but it is in my watch list.
It's the new season starts on June. No, July 3rd, the new season comes out. So, and it's only 8 episodes, so it's a real quick watch. But that was pretty good.
Okay.
It's a little slow to begin with because you're like, okay, I mean, this is, I get the premise, but then something happens and you go, okay, like now I'm back into it. But the action's great, and it's based off the movie Hannah that came out, I think, 2012 with Saoirse Ronan. And the premise is this girl is kind of a super assassin who is built up, but she is taken out of the lab that she's created in by her dad and then raised in the woods and then eventually wants to get out. Yeah, no, I liked it. Yeah.
All right, how many Pat Egan hockey sticks did you give it?
I gave it three twigs. Three out of five.
Three out of five twigs. I just started watching Harlan Coben's The Five.
The hell is that?
It's on Netflix. You know, like the Harlan Coben, like You, that show You, is one of his shows.
The Stalker show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched both seasons already.
Safe, I think, was also done.
Safe was good. I liked Safe a lot.
Yeah, but there's one called The Five.
Well, now I got to check that out.
That I started watching last night, and it's really interesting. This kid goes missing when he's like, I don't know, like 8 years old.
And, okay.
All of a sudden, his DNA shows up at a murder 20 years later.
That sounds really familiar to something. Oh, that was...
The Five.
Well, no. It sounds like season three of True Detective.
Yeah.
Where the DNA shows up from somebody who was missing for a while.
Yeah. And at a
crime scene.
Well, and I just finished, and maybe D-Gun's listening, but and I know a lot of people said this in his...
To you, no.
...responses, yeah. Fauda, I just finished.
Yeah, you're a big Fauda proponent, and I've heard good things from you and a couple other people.
It was good.
I finally got around to Watchmen on HBO, the miniseries. I liked it. A lot. They did a really good job with it. I liked it more than the movie. But man, Damon Lindelof, he created Lost. He did The Leftovers. He just has this propensity to not end things and leave it open-ended. And it literally, at 1:30 in the morning, I was livid because I could see what was happening. And I'm saying it out loud going, you better not do blank, knowing full well he was going to do it. And sure enough, he did.
Yeah. That show Lost, like I thought it was great in the beginning. And then I just got so frustrated with it.
Well, yeah. And
it's like, just tell me what the hell's going on.
It's amazing because there's two types of people. There's people that watched it in real time and spent 7 years of your life trying to figure out what was going on. And then there are the people who binged it. And the people who binged it go, oh, yeah, I didn't think it was that bad. I'm telling you, when you watched it, and the one season was like 2 years in between.
Yeah.
And when you have to wait that out and wait every single week to see a new episode, it changes your opinion, man. It really does.
Yeah, because it changes your perspective and level of patience. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Jay in Philly on the Fanatic. Hey, Jay.
Hey, how's it going, Jason?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, long time listener, first time caller. I love you guys, and I love this topic we're talking about today.
Thank you.
I was thrilled when I turned it on and heard this talk about greatness being thrown around, Sam Henke, and even the polarization and conversation around sports. It's one of the things that drives me nuts. I can barely talk sports with anyone at this point. My thing that I wanted to run by you, and you may disagree with me on this one, but I really want to hear your take on, is probably the most polarizing, or one of them right now, that at least around my friend group, is Carson Wentz.
And you're
just the
right.
Notion of, I got into it with a producer on one of the other shows I won't name it. I tried calling in, and I was trying to have a dialogue with him just before I even got on to talk to the show host, and he just kept throwing at me, well, look what he did with, these ragtag receivers. He made the string of wins he put together. Who else has done that in history? And he kept wanting to try to bring it back to one niche example. Say, you know, can you name one other person in history that did it with those receivers? And I mean, if you try to get that niche, I can name a bunch of quarterbacks that did impressive things for a couple strings of games along the way. Now, don't get me wrong. I'd like Carson Wentz. I was just as excited as everybody, especially during the NBA season or MVP season. He got hurt. I like the guy. I think he has potential to be a great quarterback. But the big notion around him of the whole conversation about him being the potential best quarterback now and projecting to be the best quarterback in franchise history, and that it's almost a lock, the idea of that notion. It's driving me crazy that the guy has been almost blessed. And to me, he really hasn't done much that I've seen that gets me too excited long-term, more so than some other quarterbacks did in the first couple of years. Like, an example I think of is like a Mark Sanchez, and look at what he did in his first couple of years with the New York Jets and kind of how, you know, it's not apples to apples, but that's kind of where I'm going with it. Where
he went to two championship games on the back of a great defense with Rex Ryan.
Yeah, different circumstances, not apples to apples. But my whole thing is, I just, you know, this idea of Wentz, I just feel like he's one of those people who's been already baptized as the great future, and I want to believe and have the hope. I just don't see enough evidence And I wanted to see your take on just kind of the conversation around him. And
well, see, to me, Jay, it's a great one, because to me, Carson Wentz conversation in this town has become nauseating. And here's why. Because they won the Super Bowl, their only Super Bowl, after all those years of waiting, 52 years of waiting, with a backup, created a subculture of the Folesian society, which is very vocal and very annoying. And I love Nick Foles and what he did. And I love Wentz and what he's capable of. But again, to the point of what I'm talking about today is, Carson Wentz isn't great. You know why? Because he hasn't achieved greatness. And don't give me regular... Look, I loved him in that MVP year like you did, where he was great through the first 13 games before he got hurt against the Rams. And the prospect of his talent, to me, is very high. But I've seen a lot of guys in sports with the prospect of talent being very high that weren't great. Because, A, whether it's, you know, injuries that derailed that ability, whether that's the ability of the GM to surround the talent of that quarterback or any player with the right tools to achieve greatness, whether it's, you know, look, they just not, when they get on the big stage, they can't perform. You know, there's a greatness, again, is earned through achievement. You know, you can be a great talent, but greatness is earned through achievement and over time. You don't earn greatness in a season. You earn greatness in a career. And Carson Wentz, I think, is a very good NFL quarterback. And that's obviously who I would have moved forward with when you had to make the decision between Foles and Wentz. I didn't even think it was a decision.
Great.
But, you know, to me, those people who say he's great, I think, again, that's overuse of the word great in sports. And I'm not being a hater. I would like Carson Wentz a lot.
James, I'd loved going back to earlier Mike's show. I followed you for a long time, and that's what I love about the sports conversation is these things can exist together. You know, he's an exciting prospect. I enjoy watching the guy, but, you know, as soon as you start getting in conversation, like, people get crazy about it, and you can't even have a dialogue and talk about what you're seeing and, you know, analyze the game and play about it, jumping into that polarizing, you know, your Carson Wentz.
Yeah, it's like we got to just... You're breaking up a little bit, Jay, so I gotta let you go, but thanks for the call. It's again, it's this need to put a label on a guy as he's a bust and he stinks, or he is great, and there's no middle ground. It's like the ability to just say, hey, Carson's a really good quarterback. If the GM, if Howie Roseman does a good job and surrounds him with the right talent, whether that be at receiver, running back, and offensive line, he could really be a good one. He could be great. We'll see if he has that in him to be great, and I'll only know that he was great through his achievement throughout a sustained period of time.
Yeah, I think he's already great.
But what has he achieved for Pat? What's great to you? Like, what is the definition of sports greatness for you?
A guy who can put his team on his back and overcome the lack of talent around him.
He has done that,
and it's not just to the point of the caller. It's, to me at least, and I understand what he's saying. It's 1 year that you look at what he did with the bad wide receivers. He said it's niche. I don't think it's niche. I think it's a valid argument of the fact that he was able to do what he did this past season with Rob Davis at wide receiver, but he did it 2 years in his 4 year career, because you look at the first year that his rookie year. I mean, he had Price Trex, for Christ's sake, and DGB and. I think pretty much his entire receiving core is out of the league.
Yeah.
So, really, the only year that he had wide receivers was the sophomore year, and he had Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffrey, who was bought in, and Zach Ertz, and you saw what he was able to do. He was on an MVP trajectory, and I think he should have won MVP, to be honest with you, but he didn't. He lost it to Tom Brady, and that's because he got injured. But when you're able to break the franchise record for most passing yards in a season...
In 13 games.
And then you're able to get 4,000, become the franchise's first 4,000-yard passer. And I understand, by the way, too, it's a passing league now. Mm-hmm. You also have a quarterback
and
a head coach.
It's not apples to apples.
Yeah, you have a quarterback as a head coach who's calling probably more passing plays than run plays because he's a quarterback. But he's able to throw for 4,000 yards and lead his team to the playoffs at a time where you had to beat divisional opponents, including the Dallas Cowboys, who needed the game as well, but it was really their division to lose. And he was able to do it with the lack of the talent. I don't know if many other quarterbacks around the Lee could have done what he did. I mean, and once again, maybe I'm being extreme in this thought, but I think he's borderline top five in the league. And I think if you went through the list of quarterbacks and just, you know, put them in the same situation of Carson Wentz, you know, like you look at Tom Brady, for example. Tom Brady didn't have a great season last year with the Patriots. He had a very good season, but he wasn't this all-world season. It probably wasn't a top-five quarterback season. But when you go down to Tampa Bay and you're surrounded by, you know, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and Gronk. O.J. Howard and Gronk, I mean, he's going to have a monster year because of the weapons. So, but if you put him with the weapons that Carson Wentz had last year, and obviously we can't do that, but I'm interested to see how he would have adapted. Now, maybe he would have adapted fine.
How would Rodgers have done? How would Russell Wilson have done?
Now, Rodgers, I think, and you pointed this out last week when we did a show, he had one touchdown pass to a first-round pick in his career, and that was Mercedes Lewis on his second team. So he's dealt with the lack of talent in his career. He's dealt with very good wide receivers, though, too. I mean, Jordy Nelson, very, very good. Devontae Adams, very, very good. But, you know, and Brady, the same thing. He's made some wide receivers out to probably be better than they are because of his greatness. That's what Carson Wentz was able to do last year. He was able to make a guy like Greg Ward Jr. a serviceable wide receiver, and I don't know how many other quarterbacks would have been able to do that.
Look, I agree with you. Like, those accomplishments are very good. They're perhaps great when you consider just how poor some of the talent that has been around him is, and I agree with that. While those seasons and those performances may have been very good to maybe great, I'm not ready to bestow the mantle of greatness on a player again until the greatest of accomplishments happen. And the fact does remain that he hasn't performed in the playoffs because of injury. He didn't finish the game this year. And I'm not saying he's injury prone, and I'm not a hater. But what I'm saying is that if we're going to put the great label on a guy, he has to have great achievement. We just go and Pat, like you, I agree with you. I feel the same way about Wentz. I love his skill set. I love his demeanor. I don't care that he doesn't get along with everybody because
I think that's normal.
For an alpha, it absolutely is.
Well, I know. I just think it's. And I had this conversation with somebody else at the station.
Of holding people accountable.
You know, he works with 53 guys.
Yeah,
53 guys. Not everyone's going to like you.
No. And you got to get over that.
We work with like 10 here, and I don't like half of you people. No, I mean, kidding. I'm kidding. But like, no, it's absurd to think that 53 guys would all be bought into the same person.
No, they're not. And you're right. That's the real world, and that's the fact of the matter. But to me, he could be a great quarterback if he accomplishes great things. And it's all. And again, it's all not just on him. Injury is a part of it. The other part of it is his general manager. I did a podcast last week where we went through the depth charts of the Eagles for a show. And I got to tell you, I was horrified at the lack of depth that this team has at so many positions.
Yeah, it's not good.
Pat, a wide receiver. I mean, Alshon right now couldn't go.
Yep.
Deshaun is like one of the biggest question marks in the history of question marks at his age and coming off the year that he had last year where he basically played two halves throughout the whole season, right?
Yeah.
And a core injury and a dynamic, explosive player, but can he even stay healthy anymore? It's a big ask. And then, you know, a rookie wide receiver in Jalen Reagor could end up being put in a position of being the number one guy. That's almost not fair to Reagor.
On a season where you don't have training camp, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't have your off-season program.
Yeah, and I don't really buy into that it'll affect players as much as everybody else, but still, it's a valid point to make.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, and he wasn't like the slam dunk guy. He was a little bit of the project guy that they drafted. And then, you know,
hottest drops, by the way.
Yeah.
TCU, which is, that's troubling.
Yeah, and then for a team that had trouble with drops. And then you look at offensive line, and I know that Doug kind of poo-pooed Jason Peters coming back, but, I mean, look how thin the depth chart is at offensive line. Look how thin it is.
If Jason Peters is not back with this team by training camp, he'll be back with this team by week three.
If he doesn't sign with someone else.
I don't think he will, though.
Yeah, and again, this is the self-inflicted wound of how we drafted an offensive lineman in Dillard that can't step in year two and not having that faith. And then you also, look, Lane Johnson got hurt last year. Jason Kelsey's up there in years. Brooks got hurt. I mean, Brandon Brooks, I mean, if you have to go to second level talent on the offensive line, you're in big time trouble.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't want to make this, I hate saying this too, but since it's just me and you listening here, I don't want to make this a Jalen Hurts conversation, but that's why, to me, that pick made
more
zero
egregious.
Sense because yeah. you had, if you're going to take a backup at any position,
was the position not to take it.
Yeah, it's just because I know it's silly to say this in Philadelphia where you just won a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback, but 99.9% of the time when you get to your backup, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
You're not winning. So Howie hasn't done a good job at refilling the talent pool. And
well, like it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, like saying that Sam Hinkie was great and he didn't accomplish anything other than, you know, tanking and being able to grab some assets and look, some high-end players in Embiid and Simmons. Howie did win something, but to me, he's not great.
No, and I think he hit on every single move. I think it was a magical year where he hit on everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the little tiny veteran signings that he did turned out to be
Robinson,
great.
Patrick Robinson, Chris Long, LeGarrette Blount,
yeah, all
trade
of them.
For Ajayi.
All of them hit.
Alshon, right?
You have an owner in Jeffrey Lurie who's loyal to his guys, but also he doesn't really like constant change a lot of times, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he has 13 years of Andy Reid, and Joe Banner was there forever, and he likes the long, sustained tenure. And with Howie Roseman, who's been here for a while, but in this role of back to being GM, it's only been 4 years. He wins a Super Bowl. He's going to get a long time. He's going to get a long leash.
That's a really long
leash.
And
I just don't have faith in his talent evaluation. And it reminded me a little bit of The Last Dance, if I can make a correlation here, because Jordan was getting on his teammates saying, I was trying to get them to my level. It was impossible to get to your level.
Yeah.
They were incapable of ever getting to your level.
Yeah.
And I think Howie Roseman is just simply incapable of being a good talent evaluator in football. He's a great cap guy, you know, and he can wheel and deal his ass off. But when it comes to actually evaluating football talent,
he's not
good.
Look
at his drafts, it's been bad.
Yeah, but not even, I'm understating it saying he's not good. No, you're right. He's bad. He's bad at drafting.
It's just, I mean, looking at the history, yeah, okay, he hits on here and there, and luckily he hit on Carson Wentz. I think we can all agree on that. Whether you argue that he's good or great, whatever, you can agree he hit on that pick. But looking down the list, it's basically like hit, miss, 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 hit, miss, 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 miss. Too many misses.
Yeah, way too many.
Yeah. And bad misses, like Clayton Thorson in the fifth round when you didn't need a backup quarterback then.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. There's just way too much of it, and that's part of the issue. Let's go to Tampa and talk to Henry. Henry!
Hey, guys. I'm just letting you know what I'm going through. I told Mikey Mills, I don't know if he passed it around. I got stage 3 cancer, so I'm on chemo, and I'm taking chemo medicine. I got to go on June 2nd. That'll be my third and the fourth one.
Well, we'll be thinking about you, Henry. You keep battling, man, all right?
Yeah, I am.
I'm trying to tell you, this cancer, it's horrific.
I got to stop saying that, but I know I can beat it, and I got to stay positive. So I'm not happy. I'm not happy the way the Eagles went in the second round with the draft pick. I told Mikey Miz and I told Sal Powell, I said, you're nuts. And I like Carson Wentz a lot. I like to see him pull through all this and be a good quarterback, but sometimes he gets hurt, but sometimes it's not his fault, you know?
Yeah, look, injuries in the sport of football are something that happens, but you also have a piece of it because if you're a guy that puts yourself into a position of danger, then you can't go, well, I keep getting hurt and it's just not my fault. So there's parts of it that you have culpability in, and then there's other parts, like I look at the playoff game last year and the hit from Jadeveon Clowney. I don't look at that as Wentz putting himself in peril. I think that was just a football injury and those things happen. And I don't think Jadeveon Clowney was out there targeting his head. You know, I think those things happen at a speed that's so fast that they happen. And it happened, and it sucked. And you had to put in McCown, and look what happened.
I wish the San Diego Chargers would have took Tom Brady. I'm sick of these Buck fans down here. They think that because they got Tom Brady going to win a Super Bowl, it doesn't work that way sometimes.
No, you can gather all that. Thanks, Henry, and best of luck to you, all right?
Thank you, buddy.
Keep fighting the fight,
bro. Keep your prayers. Happy holidays.
Absolutely. I will do that. Absolutely. Look, I don't know what to think of the Buccaneers.
If they don't win, it's going to be a disaster, I feel
well,
like.
Well, then it's going to be, then Brady's not as good without Belichick. That's going to be, like, the narrative, right? And it's going to be
extreme. As if Bruce Arians isn't a good coach.
Exactly. And, you know.
But there you go. It's the extreme.
That's the point.
And in football, especially, where you have one game. You don't have a series. You have one game. And as we saw with the Donovan McNabb era, anything can happen in one game.
Yep.
That if Brady plays great, but the defense doesn't hold up.
Is that his fault?
Is that his fault?
Yeah. And you look at it too. Look, and they're not going to have a tremendous amount of time to work through the kinks of a new team down there. They're not going to have the same type of offseason that we're used to. Although we'll see how that kind of plays out, Pat, because, you know, with, you know, the Governor Cuomo in New York saying, hey, the pro sports teams can open up their facilities. Maybe that's a little overblown at this point. Maybe these teams will have, you know, not the same exact offseason programs. They've already missed a lot, you know, in OTAs and, you know, the post-draft mini camp and all that stuff. So we'll see how that plays out. But if they don't win, then you know what the narrative is going to be, especially if the Patriots do have some success without Brady, and whether that's with Cam Newton, if they go out and grab him or whoever, we'll see. It's one of the interesting storylines to follow this year, for sure. All right, coming up, I want to talk about the match yesterday. And we'll continue this conversation.
No, I'm good.
About heaping these very prestigious words upon athletes, coaches, and GMs. To call Sam Hinkie great, to me, and I'll be extreme right now, is as idiotic as it comes, and you lose all credibility when you do so.
Yeah, to me, you're trying too hard.
Exactly.
You're trying way too hard to be a hot takes sports radio guy.
Yeah.
And exactly, and I have a shirt that said Sam Hinkie died for our sins.
Yeah, and you have his face on a shirt. 610-632-0975. It's Jason Bertitus on Memorial Day along with Pat Egan, and we're right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Number five will always love you.
What up, bro?
I'm embarrassed.
You're in a McNabb mood. Jason Bertitus, Pat Egan. Charles Barkley was a part of the broadcast yesterday.
So when I think golf, I think Barkley.
Yeah. Well, it was like True TV or whatever that it was being broadcast on. And Barkley was a part of the broadcast. And it was interesting because it was the match with Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning taking on Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. And Brady looked a little overwhelmed. Like he was a little bit out of his depth. Like playing with, you know, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson will get you out of depth real quick, but Manning's a better golfer. Even though Brady did make a great shot, just an incredible shot on one of the holes, sinking it from, it was probably like 120 yards away. But that being said, Barkley's on the broadcast, and I know that Charles and Tiger had a falling out years ago. Like, they were buddies for a period of time, but Charles had a falling out with Tiger because I think Charles was critical of Tiger about something. Maybe it was when that whole thing went down with his ex-wife, with Elin and all that, and Tiger didn't forgive him. So Charles is kind of like interviewing Tiger via like whatever, the earpiece, and they're kind of going back and forth. And you can see like Tiger was not thrilled it was Charles. It was kind of dismissive at one point. I got more important people to talk to right now, Charles, because he had to go read a putt for Peyton Manning. It was a little weird.
Yeah, I can't watch golf, and I'm certainly not watching that.
What? You didn't watch it at all?
No.
Get out!
Really?
I can't watch golf. I can't get into that.
Well, it was different than golf because they were playing golf, but there wasn't a ton of action because it's only one foursome, right? And they did a good job like weaving in other professional athletes and celebrities and stuff like that. And Verlander's there chiming in.
They saw J.J. Watt popped up at one point.
Yeah, Russell Wilson popped on. And they can't get into that. They had a bunch of different people. So, they did the best they could, given the situation. And it was decent. They raised $20 million.
That part's
for
great.
For the cause, yeah.
It's like the horse competition. I just can't get into it. I can't get into the...
While watching horse racing?
No, the horse competition they had on ESPN with the basketball players.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't watch golf normally, but I'm certainly not watching that. And
even with nothing else on, Pat?
I'll find something else. There's a lot of good videos on YouTube.
Yeah, like to me, it was entertaining.
I mean, I was hosting during it yesterday, but if I wasn't, I still wouldn't have watched it.
Yeah, it was entertaining. It was semi-entertaining, but it was not competition. Like, I wasn't watching it because it was a competitive sport. Because it wasn't.
You were
that.
Just watching it because it was on.
Yeah, and there was only one savior in the entire thing. Like, let's face it, like, Tiger doesn't have a great personality. Phil Mickelson has a really good personality, and I thought did a nice job. Brady didn't bring much to the table, other than the fact that he's Tom Brady. But Peyton Manning was sensational. He is talking smack. Did you see the video of him on the practice tee?
No.
Oh, you didn't see this?
I haven't seen anything.
Oh, he's talking smack to Brady, like, I should have got a caddy here. And he mentioned Nick Foles is one of the guys he should have got the caddy.
Oh, so that's good stuff.
Well, he mentioned Eli first, because Eli beat Brady twice in the Super Bowl. And then he mentioned Foles, and then he mentioned Belichick. He goes, but maybe I shouldn't bring Belichick, because that brings back bad things for me. So, but look, Peyton Manning has got a great personality, in my opinion. Whatever ESPN offered him to go into the Monday Night Football booth, it wasn't enough. You know why? Because he didn't say yes.
I think we saw his great personality on SNL when he hosted a few times.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was surprising because he's, you know, he's Peyton. I mean, he usually is giving you the chalk answer, but yeah, I'm not surprised that he's a funny guy.
He to me, he's the combination of greatness. There's that word again, right? He was a great quarterback. And he's got a really good personality. He's really likable. You know, he's got the Southern drawl, the whole thing. So, like, what's not to like, right?
But you're right. I mean, if you clearly didn't offer him enough money if he didn't say yes.
Yeah. I don't know
what else is he doing?
Yeah. I don't know what that number is for a guy that's filthy rich to begin with. And, you know, he hasn't just made money from the NFL. He's made money in lots of other ways as well. And money makes money. So I don't know what you can offer a guy that's got all that money, but whatever they offered wasn't enough because he would be tremendous in that booth.
He'd be a little bit of an upgrade from Booger.
Slight.
A little bit.
And look, I'm not saying he would be Tony Romo and like predicting plays, but think about the cerebral nature of the quarterback that he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the coach. He was the offensive play caller. He was doing all that at a time when nobody was audibling like he was at the line at Omaha and the whole thing, right? So, to me, I think he'd be a tremendous analyst for the NFL. Whether he goes there eventually, we will see. Eventually, I think he will because people aren't going to stop offering him the position. And eventually, he's going to get beaten down and give it a run. Probably. 610-632-0975. But again, there was that word greatness. And kind of where we started today is, you know, you look at that golf thing yesterday. There were four guys playing. They're all great. Two great golfers, two great football players. But we want to heap this word of greatness on people that haven't earned it yet. You can be a great talent and you can be great at your craft, but greatness is achieved through time and accomplishment. And where I started is when we come out of the pandemic in total, in full, and we're all back at stadiums and fans are high-fiving and hugging after touchdown throws or home runs or whatever it is, a goal, a basket, then we should come back from this whole pandemic and this period of pause in sports a little bit more under control. Look, we don't have to heap the praise reserved for greats on people that haven't deserved it yet. And we also don't have to be so set in our opinion that if somebody disagrees with it, they're an idiot. We have to get better about the way we correspond about sports. Because having the rug pulled out from under us has been enough to make us realize, like, wow, it really means a lot. For some people, maybe they didn't, you know, during this period of time, they didn't have that same feeling of, look, maybe sports got put in perspective of being a lesser level of importance in your life. We understand that in the grand scheme of things, it's entertainment and it means a lot to us, but you know, what has been going on with life and death. So you have that perspective. But what I'm saying is, can we come out of this and go kind of roll it back pre-social media and pre, you know, hot take, and be a little bit more understanding of other people's opinions? And can those opinions be a little bit more under control and stop heaping these really important, gaudy words onto athletes or teams or whatever before they've even accomplished anything? And I went back, and again, I saw a guy on another station that was saying that Sam Hinkie was great. And I'll tell you why he was great. He had the long view, and he collected assets and
Warning, this is a hot take alert.
Yeah, I mean, like, that whole thing, like, that your credibility goes out the window. Then the next day, the guy spent an entire day defending Gabe Kapler. So it's like, take this for what it's worth. But
yeah, he's really trying too hard to be the hot take guy.
But that, like, takes a big dump right on our industry.
No, it does. I mean, it looks bad.
Yeah, it does. And like Sam Hinkie, you can like what he did, and you can be a part of the subculture of people that love him because they didn't get hugged enough as a kid or whatever it may be, right? And because he's the poster child of a disenchanted youth. Like, I think he's more that than he is a great GM or a good GM. You know, like, I can't sit there and go, great, like, what has been accomplishment because of the fruits of his labor? Okay, they got two players and Robert Covington and Dario. But what do those players really get you? They haven't gotten past the second round. And I get he didn't get to see it through. But the call...
But that was his choice, too.
Well, it wasn't.
No, but it was, though. They pressured him, but he could have agreed to...
He lost his power, though.
He could have agreed, though, to work with the Colangelos, and he didn't want to. And I understand why he didn't want to.
Because he wouldn't have been able to execute...
His plan.
His vision, yeah.
I get that, but it can't be lost on Sixers fans that he walked away. It wasn't like he was fired.
Yeah.
He left. You know, it's like...
packed up his toothbrush and went home.
A former co-host of yours that we might hit his drops. He left. Wasn't fired. He said goodbye.
Yeah, no, I get it, but to sit there...
Get out! Get out!
But you know the subculture of the Hinkieites. Like, they think that he is... They think he
walks on water.
Yeah.
And they're tired as... banner, for Christ's sake.
And I look at it and I go, okay, what has he accomplished? I don't want to have this conversation, but I'll say it anyway. The whole process thing isn't a success yet because they haven't gotten past the second round with the two key components, and they missed more than they hit.
Man,
Nerlens Noel and all that.
I did a whole show a year ago, might have been actually two, I think it was 2 years ago, saying if the process does not yield a championship, it was a failure. Now,
it's true.
I'm a millennial, so I'm supposed to be the generation of grabbing, you know, the participation trophies. And yet I have all these people calling up saying I'm being too hard on the guy. And I couldn't believe it. In Philadelphia, we were saying, no, we're good with second place. That wasn't a failure. What are you talking about?
Yeah, when you take something away for 4 years.
Yeah, you're doing it for a reason, and that is to win a championship. I love the logic that Sam Hinkie used. I think he could have went about it a better way, i.e. the way he treated people, because it hindered his ability to get workouts, to talk to agents, and getting Porzingis instead of Okafor when you certainly didn't need a center after drafting a center too straight.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.